Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 16th of August. David Winston is joining us this hour as we look at the Republican presidential field and all that's been happening over the course of just the last few days, with the Iowa straw poll being over now, Michelle Bachmann the winner, Ron Paul coming in second. Is this meaningful at all, this straw poll, or are the caucuses just much, much, much more important? Governor of Texas Rick Perry decides to enter the race and does so with a lot of publicity. And Tim Pawlenty, the former governor of Minnesota, has decided to withdraw from the race. David Winston is president of the Winston Group. He's a frequent guest on our show. It's a strategic planning and survey research firm. He was formerly the director of planning for Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, where he oversaw many initiatives, education, taxes, Social Security, health care, and technology. He is an advisor now for Speaker of the House John Boehner. He was a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, where he did statistical policy and econometric modeling. I'll ask him what that is. What is that? And he served in a senior staff role to the RNC chairman. He's a columnist for the Capitol Hill newspaper Roll Call and an election analyst for CBS. We're going to be welcoming phone calls for him this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hi, David.
Good morning, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm fine. It's summertime, sir.
Yes, it is.
I love the summertime.
It's supposed to be slow, but at least in the political world, it hasn't sort of accommodated. Apparently, the tempo's been a little bit faster than everybody thought. But
yeah, particularly for the Republicans. They've just been getting all kinds of excitement going here, people leaving, people entering, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, for the first time with Ames, whether, you know, the level of stature that it has or impact that it has, it's the first time that somebody's been able to sit down and actually count votes. And so it gives some sense, depending on how valid you think the numbers are. Nonetheless, it gives some sense of finally there's a number to look at where there's actually people competing against each other.
So what sense did it give you when it was over?
Well, I mean, the one dynamic that was there is at least the two individuals that are considered the sort of leading candidates, Governor Perry and Governor Romney, weren't there and weren't participating. And in fact, I mean, intentionally skipped it. So, I mean, that obviously sort of put the damper on whatever the results are. But clearly, what this had evolved into was a specific race between Michelle Bachmann and Tim Pawlenty in terms of who was going to survive this. And clearly, Michelle Bachmann easily won that confrontation. And Tim Pawlenty, who's a good candidate, was relying strictly on political operations to sort of pull him through. And so the question is, did he have it in place? And clearly he didn't.
Yeah, I was way off base with that. I thought for sure, when I think of a year ago this time, that he would be the Republican presidential candidate for this upcoming race. I really thought he would be.
Well, I've seen him at a variety of things over the past couple of years prior to this campaign. And I think your conclusion is not too far off. I mean, he was very compelling. You know, you may disagree or agree, but he was a very substantive fellow.
Yes.
But his campaign ended up being more about his biography, more about his political operation than what he was going to do as president. I think that's a sort of a warning signal for all candidates that you're going to have more than just simply a good political operation and a good biography. You're going to need to be able to lay out some things to people in terms of what you want to do. And that's what people are looking for. The attitude, whether it's Republicans, Democrats, Independents, in terms of the direction of the country, is just horrible. And what that means is people are paying real attention to what candidates have to really say.
Yeah. Were you surprised that Michelle Bachmann won? Tell me about her victory. What does it mean?
Surprised is a question. I think nobody knew what to make of her in terms of what her political strength was, and so I think this was just trying to get a sense of was it, you know, at what level was it? Clearly, it was enough to win. Although Ron Paul came in a pretty close second. Again, he was only 150 votes behind. But let me also put some context to this. Had she gotten that same level of votes back in 1999, when you had George W. Bush against Steve Forbes in that particular straw poll, she would have actually finished third behind the two of them. And so it's certainly a reflection that she's farther along than some people thought. But given that contrast that I gave you in terms of 1999, it still shows that she's got a long way to go. I would suggest that kind of what you have now is she separated herself from the sort of second tier of candidates, but she's not amongst the top tier at this point.
Yeah. I think the guy who's really entered with a certain amount of pizzazz, although his position on certain issues could get him in trouble, is Governor Rick Perry. He's got kind of this, you know, presence about him, doesn't he?
Well, he's certainly charismatic,
and he
certainly managed to get a lot of news coverage in terms of his first couple of days. I mean, I think yesterday was an example of both the sort of excitement that he can bring and sort of the problems that he can bring to himself in terms of the campaign. I mean, there were a couple of statements that he made yesterday that were clearly controversial, and that he's going to spend the next couple of days trying to explain. But having said that, he jumps into the race, clearly being just slightly behind Romney, but clearly right there with him. And he's got a lot of engagement in terms of getting audiences pumped up. But ultimately, yesterday he had a few errors there that he's going to need to get better in.
What errors yesterday?
Well, no, I mean the comment about Bernanke in terms of what he was talking about doing and some of the policy being treasonous. That's an example where you've got a bit of bravado that you're going to have to ratchet back a bit and talk about the policy and not sort of come up with those sort of grand statements that again sort of are more hyperbole than they are policy statements.
I think one of his big problems, I don't know if he were the candidate, this idea of seceding from the union when you want to run for president, it seems to me could be a little problematic for him.
Well, I think that was my understanding. It was done a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, and he was just sort of alluding to that as you know, oh, I could do this if I wanted, you know, if that was a direction we might think about. But I don't think there was never really a serious, it wasn't necessarily a serious thought. But having said that, what you are getting to is there are moments when he's clearly done some hyperbole that could be easily misinterpreted. And when you get into a presidential race, you just can't have comments like that misinterpreted. You've got to be very precise in what you say, and he'll get there. I mean, look, he's just gotten into the campaign cycle here, and so there are going to be some initial, lack of specificity or not specificity, but being very tight in terms of your message that you're not going to have initially, and he'll get there.
Is Mitt Romney the strongest candidate against President Obama because of the money experience, the business experience, the knowledge of the economy, et cetera?
Well, at least as you look at surveys right now, the national surveys done by the media, he seems to be the strongest at this point. Although at this point, again, he at best he's even in a lot of these surveys. This is Governor Romney. He's slightly behind. With Governor Perry, you need to see sort of how he develops as a candidate. I don't think it's clear how he matches up against the president yet. And we'll, give him a week or two, and then those ballot tests begin to matter in terms of people getting a perception of Perry. So there's a real contrast there. So I at this point, I don't think it's clear what Perry's standing is against the president. But I will tell you, at least in terms of the other candidates, and still one of the things the president, despite what I guess Gallup gave him a 39% job approval rating on Sunday, which was the first time he dropped below 40.
Right.
Nonetheless, when you do the actual ballot test at this point, at best, Republicans are even.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite at this point?
No, not at this point. And to some degree, my hands are a little bit tied. I mean, I work closely with the Speaker Boehner, so my time is sort of taken up doing that, to say the least.
And do you think this president, that Obama, is in deep trouble, David, because of high unemployment, because of the economy? Is he quite vulnerable?
Yes. No, he has had two things sort of emerge that he's just struggling with. I mean, one, clearly, since he became president, unemployment hasn't been below 8%. And that's just the longest time period that we've seen that sustained high level of unemployment. And most of that time, it's been above 9%. And so I don't care who's president. If you've got those sort of numbers, you're going to have difficulty. But I think the other thing, and this was particularly difficult for the White House to sort of have to manage at this point, and that was the economic growth figures for the first two quarters of this year, the first quarter being 0.4% and the second one being 1.3% when the White House was hoping for, you know, a range of 3 to 4. And there are two elements that happens there. One, clearly you're not getting the economic growth you need to create jobs. But the other thing that's also going to occur as a result of that is, I mean, if you think we're looking at deficits now when you have anemic growth like that, and given the projections that people had in terms of what economic growth would look like and what that would mean to tax revenues, now all of a sudden you're going to see less tax revenues because of the lower economic growth, which means the debt will get larger. So he's a bit between a rock and a hard place at this point. But where the public is at, he's been in office for 2.5 years, and this is becoming his economy.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything the Democrats are urging him, some Democrats, to be a little more forceful and to come up with some plans to really create jobs, perhaps a second stimulus? The Times had an interesting piece on Sunday saying he's more likely to go the course that he's been on. In terms of, put your head in on the other side for a moment, in terms of making his position stronger, what do you think he should do?
Well, this is actually true for him and true for the Republican side and sort of everybody. I have a clear plan that people can understand. They can disagree with it or agree with it, but you want to have a sense that here's the direction I'm going, and at least I have a plan that I think may work, right? And at least being that, I think what you've seen some Democrats say, and I'm sort of broadly here, has been, you know, where have you been in these fights? Right, you haven't even engaged in many of these fights until it was too late. You've got some folks who clearly want to go back and say, we need stimulus too. I'd suggest that the political environment at this point makes that just hugely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what he's trying to struggle with is, given the fact that the traditional way that he would go would be a second stimulus and he can't get that done, then what does he do in this environment? But if I were advising him, I'd say just think through a plan that you want to have out there and get it out there so that people have some confidence in your ability to lead.
Yeah. Maybe he'll hire you.
Maybe not. I don't think.
That sounds like good advice, David. David Winston is our guest. What about the – do we just make too much because it's kind of a media event and they got good food at the Iowa State Fair and these small, beautiful little American towns and it's a lot of fun? Do we make way too much of this Iowa straw poll? Do you wish that this weren't the first thing to happen?
Do I think we would make way too much of it? Yes. I mean, it was. You're talking about 14,000 people.
I know.
In terms of an electorate that's huge, but having said that, you know, it's still the first event, and it finally, you know, lets people sort of take some level of temperature of where things are at. It lets these candidates be in a situation where, you know, they're clearly up against each other. So it's an interesting first step that sort of kicks things off. But again, you know, Romney won it last time, and he didn't get the nomination. You just sort of have to take everything with sort of a grain of salt.
We welcome phone calls for David. David Winston is our guest this hour. We're talking about the Republican presidential field and all that's been happening in terms of the Iowa straw poll. Tim Pawlenty leaving the race, Rick Perry entering the race, and welcoming your phone calls. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. David is a longtime Republican political strategist. He's president of the Winston Group. He was really top aide, director of planning for Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, and he is a senior advisor for Speaker of the House John Boehner right now. We'll start taking your phone calls momentarily here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, a fascinating look at language. We'll speak with the author of What Language Is and What It Isn't and What It Could Be. He looks at languages that, well, there are 6,000 languages. Isn't that something? Many of them are starting to disappear, but he looks at the history of languages, and if you're an isolated country, what that does to your language. Does it make it easier to learn, more difficult to learn? He talks about Navajo, who wrote the codes, you know, for World War II, looks at many different languages, and you'll find it fascinating. Black English, he talks about that, Persian languages, of course, English, Germanic languages, Romance languages. We'll have fun. I know you like that kind of thing. So that's hour number two. David Winston this hour. Our lines are filled, but keep trying. You'll get through at some point. 800-486-8655. Let's go to Bill in Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I understand that your guest is a Republican, but I think that he gave Governor Perry way too easy a pass on some of the statements he's made, for example, about Bernanke's actions being treasonous, and also on his supposedly joking comment about secession from the Union. These are statements that are in the same category as seeing placards in the Tea Party rallies with Obama with a Hitler haircut and a mustache and swastikas around him, and calling the president a socialist or worse, a communist. And I just wonder if he's trying to say that this is the level of rhetoric we can expect in the Republican campaign from now on, if this is just the new normal.
David.
Well, I hope not. I would make one slight distinction, right? There's the Hitler level, and then there's everything else, because it's sort of like if you're ever a political person and some thought comes in to like compare somebody to Hitler, the first thing you should do is like stop thinking, right, and move on to another topic. But having said that, no, I don't necessarily disagree with what the caller was saying in the sense of the statement seemed, in terms of the Bernanke statement, was not a helpful statement for him yesterday. But I would also suggest that what this is his first couple of days on the campaign trail. He will tighten this up, and this will get a lot better because that sort of rhetoric over an extended period of time is going to be problematic. And again, what Republicans are going to have to do here, and this goes back to what I was saying before in terms of when you take a look at these ballot tests against the president is clearly struggling in terms of the eyes of the American people. Having said that, the Republican candidate just simply pointing out one more time that the president has got difficulty, the public's reaction is generally, well, we know that. What are you going to do? And I think to all the Republican candidates, the challenge is going to be, all right, what's the alternative that I'm presenting, why you should vote for me as opposed to the president?
Thanks for the call. Email from Agnes from Black Earth, who wanted to know if it's true that people had to pay $30 to participate in the Iowa straw poll.
Well, what it is they have to buy a ticket for the dinner, right? And that's the way it works. So yeah, technically she's correct. And so you had a lot of these campaigns. What they were doing is they were purchasing tickets so they could hand out, you know, so that people could go to the dinner for free. And oh, by the way, they were able to vote as well. But it's in theory for a dinner.
We go to Mike in Sheboygan. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I was just curious about this Ron Paul phenomenon. That isn't anything new. It's been his support has just been growing and growing, and I was just kind of curious, you know, at what point the Republican Party is going to start, you know, digesting some of his platform into the broader party? Because right now, there's a reason he's so successful in the polls. I mean, there's a reason people are so passionate about him. These are metals investors, you know, turned on to the metals 10 years ago. You know, people that you know, they understand the system and very patriotic folks, and they realize we have some deep problems that aren't addressed in these sound bites, and they're not addressed in the social platform. So I'm just curious, at what point does, you know, the media and everybody else start, you know, dissecting and really considering what this guy is bringing to the table? Because when people hear him, they're like, this guy, you know, they're just passionate about him. I'll leave it at that.
All right, David.
Now, and I don't. There's a core of people that are very much hardcore Paul supporters, and I think one of these sort of injustices that sort of emerged out of the Iowa caucuses is, you know, Michelle Bachmann got all this coverage. Paul was only 150 votes behind her, and everybody seemed to just completely ignore him. Now, having said that, the dynamic with Paul has always been he gets to a certain point of support, but it's unclear how he grows beyond that. And so while there's a core group of people It seems that he's having difficulty in terms of expanding that, and the sort of line about that, you know, Ron Paul can get 20,000 people, or I'm sorry, can get 2,000 people anywhere, but try to make that 4,000 and he can't do it. And I think the challenge to him somehow is how to not be represent, you know, 5 to 10% of the Republican Party, but figure out how he can appeal to a broader base. And it's something that he's been challenged with and hasn't been able to do so far.
Let's talk about who of the Republican candidates we identified the president's problem, the high unemployment rate, no clear message about how to fix the economy. When you look at who's out there at this moment, and you can even include those who left the race like Pawlenty over the weekend, is there a candidate, do you think, who's strongest on fix the economy? And does somebody like Michelle Bachmann run into trouble because she's not perceived, and maybe wrongfully so, maybe she is, to be the candidate who can really grow this economy?
Kathleen, there are two pieces to that. I mean, I think you've got a couple of candidates out there who you can point to who have been in situations where they've created jobs, grown the economy, and in terms of their specific situations. And again, you've got Governor Perry in Texas, you've got Governor Romney in Massachusetts. You had Newt, when Newt was Speaker, working with President Clinton in terms of balancing the budget and creating jobs in terms of the end of the 1990s. Having said that, in contrast to somebody like Michelle Bachmann, who's a three-term member of Congress who really hasn't had a chance to sort of engage at the same levels of as the three I just mentioned, you know, obviously that contrast is not going to be as positive. But having said that, the public, while the bios are interesting, and this is what Governor Pawlenty ran into, while the bios are interesting, it's what are you going to do with that? What are you proposing, given that experience, that in fact is going to grow the economy and create jobs? And do I have confidence in terms of what you're proposing will work? And while the biography is important, it's the ideas that are more important. And that's the challenge to Republicans. Again, something is nothing is not going to beat the president of the United States. I mean, someone's going to have a plan. The president's got the same challenge. He just can't simply glide along here either. He's got to come up with a plan as well. So we'll see how that evolves over the next couple of months.
Kelly in River Falls. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Just one quick comment about jobs before I move on to my comment about Mr. Paul. Is I've heard out of the Republican Party for years that government doesn't create jobs. So when the candidates say, I've got a plan to create jobs if I get elected president, that would seem to contradict their earlier message. But my question is, I listened to Ron Paul talk, and Pawlenty, although I wasn't a fan, I thought he came across as level-headed, as opposed to some of the frothing at the mouth where it's just kind of an attack on Barack Obama, as opposed to putting forth a plan of their own. And I'm wondering if you could contrast, like, Ron Paul reminds me of kind of like Ralph Nader. He's got some ideas, but nobody wants to listen to him.
Well, it's funny. I literally read somewhere this morning someone making that exact analogy of Ron Paul to Ralph Nader. I think the dynamic that exists with Ron Paul, like I said before, is he's got this core group of people who really support him, and he's got to think through, if he's going to govern, how does he build a majority coalition, and that means pulling people into supporting him, and that means thinking through what can he say in terms of his policies to sort of broaden that out. And he's clearly laying out what he believes and not really trying, at least at this point, it doesn't seem like he's trying to expand that. Having said that, one of the things that I think Governor Pawlenty got into, and I think if you watched the debate the other night, is exactly what the caller was sort of describing. Actually, Pawlenty himself spent most of his time sort of attacking President Obama, as opposed to really defining what it was he was going to do, or spending his time attacking Michelle Bachmann as opposed to defining what he was going to do. And I think ultimately his strength was he should have just stood up and talked about what it is he wanted to do, and he never got to that point, which I think was unfortunate for him. And that was one of the reasons why the campaign didn't work. I do want to go back to, however, to being a Republican, I do have to respond to this one, and that is the whole idea of government doesn't create jobs. The idea here is, though, but policies have a huge impact. So, for example, you can agree or disagree in terms of whether you think this is the right policy, but, for example, if you allowed companies be able to bring back money into the country in terms of not having to pay taxes on it so that we could get all that capital back here, the idea would be that, you know, they would invest and create jobs. I mean, that's an example of where it's not government creating a job, but it's the policy that would impact in terms of behavior and potentially creating a friendlier environment to create jobs.
Thanks very much, Kelly, for the call. Mike in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, I have a comment and then a question. And kind of following along with what your guest was saying right now, you know, it seems to me that any Republican candidate who goes out there has got to say, you know, it's not government's job to create jobs. It's government's job to create a climate of confidence and stability and policies which are conducive to the private sector, which is the entity that does create jobs. And it would seem to me that that would be the winning formula. I think people would understand that. And my question for your guest is, you know, surveying the current runners, I see it's just incredibly weak against Obama. I don't think they stand a chance. What possibilities do you see that Chris Christie would run?
He's been pretty hardcore about that he's not going to do this, although, I mean, as anybody sort of reevaluates what the field looks like, and I would assume that given a week or so or 2 weeks in terms of sort of evaluating the impact that Perry sort of had, would he look at it again? He might. Is he going to tell anybody that he's doing that? Absolutely not, because, again, he doesn't want to start that speculation. I have to say at this point, since he's been so hardcore about saying he's not going to do it, you sort of have to take him in his word and until you hear some sort of signal otherwise. I do want to address the caller's other point, and that is, one of the things in terms of this field, and this is what I was describing earlier, is they're still in this personality phase of the campaign where they're defining their biography, they're sort of defining the sort of personal attributes around them. Where we're going to get a sense of how they really match up against the president is when they begin to lay out their directions in terms of what they would do policy-wise, and I don't think we've reached that phase yet. Maybe we don't. Maybe Republicans don't at all, which I hope is not the case, but that's the next phase and where we can get a sense of what does this race really look like.
It's hard to. You're around these people all the time. It's always hard for me to imagine, David, what motivates these people. It's day after day, speech after speech, city after city, shaking hands, eating hot dogs, and on and on and on for an incredibly long period of time. What is it? Is there any kind of common thing that gets people who want to enter this, to want to be president? I don't understand it completely.
I can't talk for all candidates, obviously, in this particular case. And by the way, I think this cuts across party, what I'm about to say.
Uh-huh.
And that is, look, there are folks out there who really see that there's some things that need to be done, and they think they can positively impact the direction of the country. And so, therefore, they're willing to go through a lot because, you know, they think they can make things better. I think that's true for quite a few of these candidates, not all of them. I mean, I'm sure there's some that just, you know, have got very personal or reasons for power or whatever. But I think it's this general sense of I have some ideas that I think would make the country better. What I think is it was unfortunate is sometimes they have these ideas and then they get into the middle of a campaign, and rather it being about their ideas, it's about, so how bad can you make the other opponent look? And after a while, you sort of see this sort of digression of the political discourse, which is unfortunate. But ultimately, initially, I think it's this positive motivation.
Here's an email.
And by the way, I want to emphasize, that's true across both parties. That's not just,
right,
that's ours and his.
Right. Email from Howard. I'm sure that you know some Democratic operatives. Are there any rumblings that you know of, David, among Democratic operatives calling for a challenger to Obama from within the party, or is everybody behind him?
My sense is there was a brief flirtation with should there be somebody else in the race that ended very quickly. My sense of it is that while there may be some within the Democratic Party who aren't, you know, frothing at the mouth supporting him at this point the way they might have been in 2008, that there's no question within the party that at this point supporting him is the best way to move forward Democratic policies and ideas.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. John in Eagle River. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you guys?
All right, how are you?
Good. David, you seem like a sharp guy.
whatever.
He is.
So I have completely fooled you. Okay.
Well, I mean, you know. You're a fast talker. I like fast talkers. Whatever happened to Gingrich and your plan when he ran the first time? What happened this time? The other question I have is, I think Michelle Bachmann is Looney Tunes. When is she going to flame out? And the other is, haven't we had enough Texans in the White House? And, you know, wouldn't Perry be running against George W.'s sad record? And what's the fourth question? I had one more. Well, those are good enough.
Yeah, those are pretty good. Let me starting off with Newt. Newt, like many politicians, as he sort of fired up his campaign, got focused on the sort of operations technical side of it, much to the exclusion of what his actual strength is, and that is ideas. I mean, you can agree or disagree with him, but the one thing I think everybody generally agrees is that Newt is an ideas person. And I think what you've seen him try to do here is focus on those ideas. And I would suggest, actually, in this last debate, leading into this last debate, he was on the verge, if not by many already considered irrelevant to the process. And I think at least he put himself back into this discourse. We'll see what happens from here. And I think he still has a huge uphill climb. But he's got to have very good debate performance. There are going to be three debates in September. Again, I think it's an uphill climb, clearly an uphill climb, but at least that's kind of where he's at this point. Michelle Bachmann, and I think you began to see it over the Sunday morning shows, Meet the Press, Face the Nation, where what's about to happen to her is the scrutiny of her record is clearly coming, right? Because, again, people had not expected her to sort of reach this level. So this scrutiny is going to be pretty intense, and we'll see how she handles this. And there were moments on some of those shows where she was clearly quite irritated in response to certain questions. So I think, you know, we're going to see this evolve over the next 2 weeks. If she makes it through the next two to four weeks in terms of that scrutiny, then that'll show that, at least going to the cost thing, that she's now figured out how to manage and not potentially make those sort of large gaffes. Because she's had statements in the past as well, but we'll figure that out over the next 2 to 4 weeks. The idea of another Texan, that's obviously going to be for Governor Perry an underlying current narrative throughout his whole campaign, if he actually won the nomination through the election. And that's just going to be an element that's going to be talked about. And the best way that he can manage that, and you've seen him try to do that, is say, well, yeah, but Texas is clearly a success story in terms of creating jobs. That's his effort to sort of counter, well, one, he wants to promote that, obviously, but it's also has the benefit of undercutting that argument of another Texan.
Hmm. Isn't the fact that the Tea Party is running as well against the Republicans, in a sense, isn't that going to split the vote?
Ultimately, this goes to the 2010 election. I worked more so with the House side. There was a lot of tension there, but that is not unusual when you're in the process of trying to build a majority coalition. But ultimately, everybody sort of came together and sort of pointed in the same direction. Ultimately, I think that's going to happen here. Between now and then, is there going to be a lot of tension and some, you know, clear differences of opinion? Absolutely expect that. But ultimately, at the end, I think it'll everybody will end up being pointed in the same direction.
John, I'm sorry.
Does the public hold the recent fiasco with the debt limit? Do they hold that more against the Republicans or more against the Democrats?
In polls that I've seen, it's been slightly more in terms of pointing the finger at Republicans. But ultimately, at the end, the problem that everybody had in terms of that debate, Republican, Democrat, was that for the general electorate, it was like, really interesting debate that you all just had. Now would you mind getting back to the economy and jobs? I mean, that's kind of where the electorate's at. And so I would suggest that nobody did particularly well in that last round of discourse, either the president or Republicans in Congress.
That's the truth.
My recommendation for you today, John, is to listen to Bob and Ray's Slow Talkers of America. Do you know that piece?
No.
Oh, my gosh. If you like fast talkers, you're going to laugh, laugh, laugh.
When will that be on?
Oh, it's just a, well, yeah, I don't know how you'll find it. I don't know why I should play it. It's just marvelous. Slow Talkers of America. It's their national meeting.
Yeah. Well, fast talkers make you pay more attention.
I know. I'm with you. I'm with you. That's why I couldn't live in Georgia. I was there for a few years. I said, get it out. Spit it out. Say it. Say it. Please say it.
Yeah.
All right, John. Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you much.
It seems to me, maybe I'm way off base with this, David, but it seems to me as though Newt Gingrich has, that his focus is LUV. You know, he's just, he seems to be more interested in his wife and in, you know, romance, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it seems as though he's not as engaged as he used to be. He's in love.
Yeah, well, I mean, knock on wood that you know, I mean, he clearly, after having two unfortunate situations before that, this one, you know, knock on wood, is working. But having said that, I think what you're really watching here is, and that's why I think this is, he started off with this sort of political focus, and so everybody was saying, you know, you need time to raise money, do these phone calls for that. I mean, and it all became a process as opposed to what his real strength is, and that is putting him in front of people, engaging a group of people in terms of ideas and what's the best way, direction for this country to go. That's going to be his strength. And he wasn't being, he felt it, and I would agree with him in this, that he was not being put in those positions. That's where I do think the debates are ideal for him. And let me actually, the one thing that is clearly we saw begin to emerge in the 2008 campaign, that we're seeing again, is the huge role that these debates play. And I think that cannot be underestimated. And I think, if anything, we're going to see them play an even larger role this time. Again, Huckabee had no money last time and finished second, and Romney and Giuliani, who had enough money to sink Europe, didn't do particularly well. And so these debates really do play a significant role, and that's a real change in American politics.
Mm-hmm. Huckabee is a heck of a communicator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And part of it is, you know, realizing that when you're standing in front of a group of people, that ultimately what you need to do is you need to lay out what you're going to do in a clear and concise way. And that's not the responsibility of the listener. That's the responsibility of the speaker. And he did a terrific job of that. And I think that discourse, that it now comes down to that as opposed to how much money you can raise, that in fact debates sort of have this huge impact. I think it's a good evolution in terms of our political system.
Thanks, John. As always, nice to hear from you. And a listener just posted a link to Bob and Ray on our Facebook page. Well, I'll play that for you. We'll just, whatever we're talking about, we'll just play Slow Talkers of America. We'll weave that into a show. We'll let you know when. But our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. So if you want to hear Slow Talkers of America right now, you can maneuver your way to that. David Winston, president of the Winston Group, strategic advisor to Senate and House Republican leadership. He's a senior advisor for John Boehner. He was to Newt Gingrich, and we're welcoming phone calls. We're looking at the, I can't believe we're doing it already, but here it is. Things are cooking. The Republican presidential field this hour of the show, 800-486-8655 is the number. The email address is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program, Professor John McWhorter, will join us, who teaches, what does he teach? He teaches linguistics and Western civilization at Columbia University. Written a number of books. The latest is What Language Is and What It Isn't and What It Could Be. He talks about all languages being ingrown, disheveled, intricate, oral, and mixed. Pure languages simply don't exist. So that's coming up, hour number two. David Winston is our guest this hour, 800-486-8655. The number, Kathy in Waupaca. The next
Hello.
Caller. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, this may be a pointless question, being that American politics is the way it is. I think it's kind of insane that we're already talking debates a year before the election. Why is the process stretched out so long? I get tired of it, and I am seriously into politics. People who are not into it just tune it out, I think. And eventually You're getting a number of people who are hardcore who make the decisions regarding who will be the nominee. I don't think that's such a great strategy.
Well, under normal circumstances, I might agree in the sense of that the public, you know, it's too far out and they don't want to hear this. But I want to go back to, and I'm going to give you a number here that I think sort of creates a different context. And pollsters use this question called direction of the country, and the idea is it sort of reflects the optimism or pessimism in terms of how the country is going. And the most recent survey I did, I had 19% of the country think the country is headed in the right direction, 70% off the wrong track.
Wow.
Right? That's just a huge pessimistic level. But the one thing that should tell all candidates, and this is, by the way, not just presidential candidates, but if you're running for the House or Senate or if you're running for state legislature, I mean, wherever you're a candidate, is this is an unhappy electorate. And the thing that the electorate does when they're unhappy is they pay actually very close attention because they want to hear what people have to say. And so the process itself is the normal process, which may be in different years. And what I mean by process is in terms of aims being the August and the year before the actual election. So it's that's sort of the sort of unofficial kickoff. But in this particular environment, people really do want to hear what these individuals have to say. And the other thing that's different about this particular cycle, and this is sort of referring to a previous.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, where we are experiencing technical difficulties with our feed from Milwaukee at this hour of the Kathleen Dunn program. We will return just as soon as we can. We now return you to the Kathleen Dunn program, already in progress.
I think it's important to recognize that when Republicans are talking about revenues, they're willing to increase revenues but not increase taxes. Now, this goes to a basic belief that the best way to increase revenues is to increase economic activity, so you set tax rates to maximize that, okay? And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who immediately picked up the phone to dial in, okay? But that's the fundamental approach too. And this goes back to specifically, I think what she was identifying was the Bush tax cuts that everybody talks about above 200,000. And again, this is just a different viewpoint. Again, the president and some Democrats in Congress view that as millionaires and billionaires, Republicans view, if you get rid of that, that you're going to raise taxes on 894,000 small businesses. And so, you know, how people look at this issue and how that gets argued out, it clearly gives you a sense in terms of what direction. By the way, just so everybody knows, the 894,000 came from the Tax Policy Center, which is Urban Institute in Brookings. And so it's just a different way in terms of people looking at it. Having said that, ultimately, as much as we cut, the way this budget is going to get balanced is through growing the economy, which will then generate the revenues, which is what happened in the late 90s when we balanced the budget then.
An email referring to an earlier part of our conversation from Rick in Madison, government creating jobs. Government employees such as police, firefighters, clerks who process Social Security checks, rangers who protect your national parks, people who protect your water and air provide real and needed services. They spend their paychecks just like private sector employees.
Yeah, well, and provide important functions. Having said that, though, what keeps the economy going is, again, this is the private sector, and the private sector ultimately needs to have the resources to effectively support the public sector. And when the public sector gets too large and begins to sort of overwhelm it, that's where you run into the sort of stress situation that you see today. I mean, ultimately here. If there are no taxpayers, there are no teachers and there are no police, right? Because there's nobody to fund it. And so ultimately we need to find that sort of appropriate balance. And again, I tend to be a conservative Republican here in the sense of setting tax rates to maximize economic activity, and that will eventually generate the revenue.
One more call. We have about 40 seconds. We can all do that. Barb in Superior.
Hello. I just have a question. Why the Republicans seem to focus more on religion for solving the problems of our country. Perry has been praying to solve the problems. That is going to help. Well, if it hasn't helped under the Bush administration, why would it help now? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, I beg to differ there. That I think you've heard Rick Perry talk about it's all about jobs. You've heard Romney talk about the jobs. I mean, and Boehner's question in terms of the 2010 election of where are the jobs. I think you see these Republican candidates talking about those issues. They get asked questions. They respond to, but ultimately they're focused on job creation and economic growth. And you hear the president trying to address the same thing as well.
David, you did that in record time. Thank you, David. Thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure. Glad to be
Thank
on.
You. It was fun. David Winston, president of Winston Group, strategic advisor to the Senate and House Republican leadership. He is a senior advisor to John Boehner and was also to Newt Gingrich. His firm does all kinds of work on taxes, education, Social Security, healthcare, and technology. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production, Rhonda Fanning for producing the program, and thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. You were lively today. Lots of calls, lots of emails, way we like it. We'll be back with another hour in a moment.